You're listening to Coffee with Innovate Finance, where we speak with experts from the industry on the changing face of financial services and the future of fintech and financial innovation. I am Rashi Pandey, Associate Director of Membership and Growth, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Tim Coates, who's the Chief Customer and Regulatory Officer and co-founder at Oxbury. Oxbury is the UK's only dedicated agricultural bank, servicing farmers and the food supply chain across the UK, as well as offering market-leading savings accounts to anyone who believes in the future of British farming and developing global SaaS opportunities for the agri-fintech sector across the world. So thank you so much for joining me today, Tim.
Thank you very much for having me.
It seems like a very, very exciting role, you know, you have at Oxbury. So can you tell us more about, you know, Oxbury itself and the original idea behind it since, you know, inception?
Absolutely. So the original idea sort of cooked up at the end of 2017 behind Oxbury was to bring together all of the important developments that have been happening in sort of the fintech sector in the decade prior to post the financial crisis and take all of that learning and development into a sector that had faced massive underinvestment from traditional banking partners and that particularly has a really big significant transition challenge over the coming decades. So we identified that there was a real need for a dedicated bank to fund that transition.
That's wonderful to know. I think, like you said, you're probably the only one who is dedicated to, you know, agricultural and agri-fintech pretty much. So how has your journey been so far as the Chief Customer and Regulatory Officer at Oxbury?
Yes. So
have things evolved? Sorry.
things have evolved massively, of course. And, you know, my background sort of comes at this from both an agricultural background. So I'm from an agricultural background originally, so I'm from a family farming background, and I still manage that farm on the side of the desk, as it were.
Amazing.
And so therefore I'm really in the, you know, what I'm in the customer journey myself, and therefore that's a part reason that part of my role includes the word customer. I'm always thinking about what, you know, what do I need, but what do therefore my peers need in the sector. And then I was away from the farm for sort of, you know, the early part of my career, and I was working in financial services and regulation in particular. So I my experience was around that challenge of getting new banks started, which I did primarily at the FCA. So working with many of the people you've probably spoken to before. So bringing that together with two other excellent co-founders, James Barrow and Nick Evans, who themselves bring decades of banking, agriculture and technology experience together, building a great executive team and board, all of whom are still with the company. It's been a really cogent, coherent group of people. We've built a great team of technologists, agricultural specialists and financial risk managers, and got them together to scale up this opportunity. It's all been really positive on the people side. But there's been some really interesting ups and downs as well, as you might imagine, in that journey. Not least, of course, we've done this against the backdrop of the pandemic and the cost of living crisis and turbulent times linked to that in private capital markets as well. We launched the bank. Day one of the bank was in February 2021, which was completely remote as we were in the last major lockdown at the time. And obviously all of the build part being in and out of lockdown as we're going there, hiring people over Zoom, trying to raise money over Zoom, not experiences I particularly want to repeat. But actually we proved we could do it. And that was a major technical sort of milestone for us. And actually, you know, since we've taken away some of those interesting challenges, we've had a great growth journey since, supported by some excellent investors, primarily drawn from our sector, who really, you know, understand the business model, believe in it, and building really important business partnerships through the agri-food supply chain, to the extent that we broke even at the end of 2022 and have been posting month-on-month profitability ever since. So it's all starting to go really well, and it's been a really great journey. And obviously we've, you know, started from a team of three, then sort of 5, 6, 10, 30, and now over 150 colleagues, operating at the head office in Chester and all across the regions, all the rural regions of the UK. And it's been a bit of a whirlwind many times, of course, but it's been good in it, and I think it will continue to get better.
Firstly, congratulations on your financial results. I think you guys have done really well. I had no idea that you guys have grown up to 150 people. That's amazing. And thank you for sharing very, you know, openly your journey on, you know, fundraising on Zoom, et cetera. So maybe if you have tips, maybe I'll ask, you know, towards the end of the call for our early stage founders, especially.
So, yeah. Don't go meet. <Fair enough. laughs> press the flesh.
Fair enough. So yeah, moving on to Auxbury, who are your customers and what is your unique selling proposition?
Well, clearly we're a specialist agricultural bank, but we actually operate sort of in three primary customer areas. So first and foremost, our farmers and growers, those primary food producers. Secondly, supply chain partners, and we'll talk a bit more about that, I'm sure. And then thirdly, our mass market savings proposition for everyone looking for great rates, and obviously their deposits are being used to support the crucial farming sector. So our overall proposition is actually we are a technology company as well. We use our own technology. We've built our own core banking platform and CRM and other systems ourselves, which provide really bespoke products and services, financial products and services, and allow us to innovate those very quickly that farmers and growers can't really get elsewhere. And it also enables us to deliver a really competent people-led relationship banking model. Really important in our sector. Every business is quite complex and different that we support, so it's really important to have a human side to that, and really good technology is what makes that possible. You know, we have people working for us now who've come out of some of the other banks where they used to have sort of these 11 systems in any given day to try and get something to work with a customer, and with us they're using one, and everyone's using the same system across the company, and it keeps things really efficient and transparent, and leads to really good customer outcomes. And all of this tied up together, what are we trying to do? Well, as I say, we're trying to transition our sector. It's got a huge amount of headwinds, and it's got to be economically and ecologically resilient in the future. So we've got to get it working with nature, supporting rural communities, and actually ensuring that the businesses at the heart of it are financially sound and supporting the families. And they often are family businesses that are making these farming businesses work.
I love, you know, when you talk about all of this, I can almost sense that you bring in a lot of your personal, you know, passion and experience. It really shows, by the way. So that's wonderful to see and hear. So I'm sure partnerships are a key element as well in your proposition. So how do you ensure successful partnerships? And if there were practical advice you would give to fintech leaders in making partnerships work besides a Zoom call, what would that be?
Yeah, well, so we have a number of sort of unique product propositions which are really built around the idea of partnership. We have one which is called Auxbury Farm Credit, and it's about the supply chain that supports farmers on a daily basis. So funding things that farmers buy to make farming work. We've now got 23 different partners on that program. I think probably quite a crucial bit about that is that it's actually, these are actually non-commercial partnerships insofar as we are not paying them and they are not paying us. Now, what makes it key is that we have, we went into this with identifying a shared problem, an agreement to agree, aligned a set of shared goals, shared incentives, and fundamentally we're supporting the same end customer, and we're putting those customer outcomes at the heart of what the partnership is trying to seek. And that generally leads to the right approach. And obviously, we didn't start with 23 on day one. We started with two who understood it. And actually, as that's sort of been proven to work, others have seen it and come on board. And it's been really important because actually supporting that particular part of the supply chain has been really important, particularly in the last couple of years. We knew it was going to be something that was necessary anyway. But given we've had volatile prices and inflation, particularly as a result of the war in Ukraine, it's been a really important time that actually we've got a really good financial product that sits embedded with our supply chain partners there that supports farmers keep farming and do so in turbulent times. So that's been a really good kind of example, and I say that identifying shared goals, giving the incentives aligned, and focusing on the shared customer has been a really good way of getting to the right outcome for that partnership. And we roll that out through, that kind of general approach as we build partnerships in other spaces is generally the one we go for, whether that's, with technology partners or things that are sort of more strictly commercial. We always try and look for what those shared incentives are.
But of course, when you talk about partnerships, there are also challenges. So what are the main challenges in delivering successful partnerships?
Yeah, I think realism, a dose of, and expectation management, being really upfront about your current capabilities and what you expect to do in the future, and not overly conflating the two. We do a lot of technical integration work with our partners. So in that previous example, you know, we are fully integrating with the financial systems of those partners, and their financial data is therefore within our platform. Generally we've got to a good outcome, but where it's taken longer and harder is often, you know, people are used to technical integrations taking longer than they necessarily need to, and it's often just about good information sharing at the start, which is the be all and end all of whether that happens according to the timetable that everyone expects. And or, you know, we've had other partnership approaches in other spaces that again have slightly, you know, it's not been clear what all of the goals are, and particularly when we've tried to do sort of more multi-party partnerships, so they can get complicated if one partner in that is not really aligning to that kind of framework that I set out before, and is perhaps treating it a bit too commercially to start with before it's really clear what the true commercial opportunity is. So that's been a bit of a challenge. And of course, then the other thing about partnerships is and when you've got the shared customer outcome, it generally is a good thing, but occasionally it does mean you're slightly exposing your own reputation to other entities and their approaches to customer service. And sometimes the end customer isn't always clear about who's responsible for what. So that can also be a challenge. And particularly if you're in a fast paced environment and with a lot of technological change, you know, working hard on ensuring you've got that kind of agreement to how to handle the customer up front is really important to us.
Fair enough. And, you know, you've talking about technical integration, we've talking about, you know, partnerships, we spoke about, you know, your reputation on the line as well. There has been a lot of positive development in the era of, you know, open banking as well. We cannot not mention it, right? But of course, more needs to be done. So how do you think can open banking benefit businesses?
Yeah, I mean, we've been dipping our toes in the waters of open banking for some years. The only complete integration we've done so far is the important work around confirmation of payee. It's really important to engender trust in financial services and obviously in transactional payments. And for us as a new entrant, being part of that technical ecosystem that's supported by open banking is obviously really important to ensure that people trust when they deposit money with us and use us for other services. So it's a really good way that open banking is used in a collaborative way to generate a good outcome. We've actually had a lot of conceptual solutions sort of on the drawing board or you know, on the virtual whiteboards, as it were, and a lot of them we haven't sort of yet put into practice because some of this is that commercial bit around partnerships. We've sort of looked at some solutions and gone and spoken to some of the commercial parties who are sort of open banking specialists, and I think sometimes they haven't quite understood our rationale, and therefore the transaction as a whole is being treated almost too commercially. And I think that's a shame, because I think that those parties who might be sort of behaving like that are probably slightly doing themselves out of some good opportunities in the future. And I think that's, you know, there's a certain scale yet not quite happening in open banking, particularly around the account information side of things. Particularly, I think there's been more progress made in payment initiation. It's a shame, because actually there was one project we were working on which didn't quite get to go ahead. It was multi-party. We kind of showed how using open banking for the payments, you know, really helped with the unit economics and really got the idea over the line. But actually the particular open banking partner was sort of thought they found a golden egg and was being a bit too commercial, shall we say, and in the end a sort of less efficient solution was adopted, which is a shame, because I think it would have been a really good use case, and I'm sure we will get that to work in due course. It's just it's a novel area, and it does require people to work together in a really collaborative way. On the wider embedded finance stuff, we're making really good strides in the overall supply chain. I've talked a bit about one end, but actually we've got the other important part of the supply chain, which is post farm gate, as products leave the farm and go into the food supply chain. We've got some really good products we've embedded there, and it's true embedded finance in the sense of, you know, we're in the background supplying a service that is taken up by the customer should they need it as part of that transaction. So the financial proposition is there to be used efficiently, seamlessly as part of the overall proposition. And that's allowing some farmers to get into lucrative supply chains, which they probably would have, with the retailers, which they probably wouldn't otherwise have got into. There are some potential open banking use cases in that to use, but actually we're doing a lot of it on us rather than in the open banking ecosystem. But actually there's probably sort of, you know, that last bit of efficiency, that 20% could be found if we got some open banking developments into that, which I'm sure we will continue to explore.
I was going to say, as a consumer of open banking, I think the confirmation of pay has been extremely valuable as well. So, you know, just expanding further on embedded finance, can you share some case studies within that space as well?
Yes. Yeah, so, for example, there's one where we're funding, I can't mention exact names, but I think I can describe it quite nicely. There's a major UK retailer, which many of us, I'm sure, use, who have very specific product lines, and they're really keen to ensure security of supply and also transparency of the data that's attached to that supply chain. So really, you know, and that's data about the quality, that's data about a whole range of, you know, what we call agronomic factors in agriculture, and also environmental data now increasingly as well. And obviously that it requires investment at the farm side to ensure that all of that data provision can be done, investment in the actual production line, et cetera. So we're supplying that funding to enable that that investment and funding then the produce as it is on farm and actually as it leaves farm and enters the processing supply chain. So we're sort of underwriting that under that expansion for the farmer and the end supply chain and the processor and the retailer have got that, you know, that data, that clarity. They know where that supply chain is going to grow. It can be consistent, it can be secure, and deliver, you know, both good products but also good value for the end customer. So that's the kind of work we're doing. But again, it's working with those partners in the supply chain to embed a really great product for the actual farmer to purchase for us, and they remain our financial customer as they should be.
Perfect. And moving on to a bit of ESG, especially because, you know, you had also mentioned a bit of sustainable investing, et cetera, especially demanded by your customers. So what ESG initiatives is Oxbury working on at the moment?
Yeah, so we tend to call ESG responsible impact now. We think it's a sort of more useful term. And it's really important to us. It's the heart of the do. It's one of our core values. And obviously we're a regulated bank. So, you know, good governance kind of comes as is. We take that incredibly seriously. It's very important. And we're a social business first and foremost. We're serving an underserved sector. The communities where our customers are based are often, you know, marginalized and suffering with a range of challenges. That sometimes means we do partnerships with various charitable partners to support mental health initiatives in rural communities and on farm, and education about farming as well. So we do a lot of work in that area because it's a core part of our responsible impact. We've also got a scheme to ensure that there's new entrants into the sector. The average age of a farmer now is 60, which is sort of rather unusual for economic sectors in the UK. There's a lot of requirement to get new energy and enthusiasm into the sector. So we have a whole specific program called Oxbury New Gen, which will enable that transformation of the sector by bringing new entrants in, people who might otherwise, you know, find it prohibitive to enter farming because it can be quite capital intensive up front. So we've got a whole program dedicated to that. And that combines not just, you know, a set of financial and credit risk management criteria to enable that to happen, but also we work again with partners to provide specific farming advice and business planning advice to ensure we've got really high quality customers coming in through that program. And then finally, in the environmental space, you know, there's no you know, bones about it. The agricultural sector is responsible for 11% of UK emissions. It's probably been identified as probably the hardest to transition sector, and some of that is because a lot of the emissions are not fossil fuel derived. They're sort of more biogenic and sort of a natural part of nature and systems and working with animals and plants. But it's also a crucial sector for nature restoration. It's one of the few sectors which actually, you know, can not just reduce and mitigate its own impact, but actually can work to support other sectors to do so. It's where, you know, in the UK, 70% of land is farmed, managed by farmers. This is where nature restoration is going to have to happen. This is where carbon sequestration is going to have to happen. And there's a huge requirement for technology to support that, the data support that's, you know, around that as well. So we again, that's why it's so important to us to integrate that kind of data alongside financial data to enable really good decision making, both on farm and by those looking to work with farmers and growers to not just reduce emissions in the agricultural and food supply chains, but across all sectors of the economy and to restore nature. So that transition, which has to accelerate really hard over the next 5-10 years in particular, requires a dedicated financial partner who understands the data side of it as well, and that's what we're here to do. And we've got, again, a large number of initiatives in the supply chain on that, but also on farm, everything from renewable energy, decentralized renewable energy on farm, through to investment in what are called nature-based solutions, but that, you know, in simple language means, you know, planting of trees, hedges, grasslands, wetlands, and all of that kind of ecosystem creation and restoration. And then also methods for farming in a more environmentally sustainable way as well. And that they also require investment. So we're working across all of those things, with our customers and with partners as well.
Tim, this was very, very insightful. And thank you so much, you know, for taking the time out and for speaking with us today. But before I let you go, can you tell us what is next for Oxbury? And if you have any more exciting news you would like to share with us?
Yes, so we continue to grow, and we're looking to keep doing that and post our full year of profits at the end of this year, obviously. And we've got a number of forthcoming capital announcements that are to do with all of that growth, which we hope to make in the last quarter of the year, as well as our first, and you mentioned at the beginning, our first SaaS transaction, which is due to complete at the end of the year. So that's really exciting new chapter for us, because it's our route to taking everything we've been building and learning here in the UK global. So that we hope to announce again by the end of the year, and that will be our technology being used in a different different economy overseas, showing that, you know, agri-finance is a really important niche that we hope to, you know, play a really important part in working in, not just here in the UK successfully, but actually globally. So that's the sort of really exciting next chapter for us growing as a business. And we're all very excited about, you know, the future.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Tim. What a good note to end on. And for taking the time out for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
There's more power to you and to your team at Oxbury, and we wish you nothing but the best. But to our listeners, thank you so much once again for tuning into Coffee with Innovate Finance. Do look out for upcoming episodes and follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more on our events and programs. And also, if you would like to find out more about Oxbury. As always, until next time, take very good care of yourselves.